Welcome to the podcast of the Day One Weekly Broadcast with your host, Peter Wallace. Day One brings you outstanding preachers from America's mainline churches. For more information or to make a donation, please visit our website at dayone.org.
We tend to think of the Easter message as a message for the end of life. But frankly, I think we need the Easter message right now. Because as many of us know, death can come long before the end of life.
That's the Reverend Susan Sparks. I'm Peter Wallace. Join us as we celebrate Easter with an inspiring message of faith. Today, on Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's mainline Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now, to introduce this week's speaker, here's our host, Peter Wallace.
Thank you, Sherry. Today, as we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ, we're delighted to have with us the Reverend Susan Sparks, senior pastor of the historic Madison Avenue Baptist Church in New York City. Susan is a graduate of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where she earned a law degree. After working as a trial lawyer and stand-up comedian, she attended Union Theological Seminary in New York City, graduating in 2002. Susan, welcome to Day One and happy Easter.
Thank you, Peter. Happy Easter to you as well.
Your life, frankly, sounds sort of like the setup for a joke. A preacher, a lawyer, and a stand-up comedian all walk into a room, and it's you. You've had such an interesting career. How did you end up as the pastor of a Baptist church in Manhattan?
It's a great question. You know, Peter, I'm not so sure those jobs are that different, really, comedian and minister. You know, it's kind of the same job, just different clients. I think comedians and ministers both have to stand in solidarity with people, whether it's through the silly kind of crazy things in life or the really hard times, the times where life really throws you the curveball. But I found those two worlds finally came together for me when I went to seminary, and I wanted to take and reframe religion a bit through a lens of joy and humor. I had a lot of experience with religion being shame and judgment, and I wanted to take it to a different level, to a different place where joy and laughter and love was the lens through which we came at the gospel.
Now, do you still do stand-up comedy outside of the pulpit?
I do, actually. I'm on tour right now. Sounds kind of funny for a minister. I'm on tour. I'm on tour with a stand-up rabbi and a stand-up Muslim comedian. We're actually doing a tour where it's an interfaith tour to raise money for Habitat for Humanity.
Wonderful. How does being a stand-up comedian help you in your pulpit preaching?
Well, part of it certainly is how I deliver sermons, you know, a lens through which you come at parables or stories. But I think another big power that humor brings in preaching is with the congregation. I'm finding in our church that we are picking up a lot of folks who have turned away from organized religion because of a bad experience growing up. And now they're slowly but surely coming back, but they're scared. And they're very tentative when they come into church. And so the idea that they're met with joy, met with the permission to laugh and feel all of the emotions that God has given us, I think is something very healing for them and something very powerful.
Well, speaking of seeing the world through the lens of humor and joy, you have a book that's coming out soon entitled Laugh Your Way to Grace, Reclaiming the Spiritual Power of Humor. So what was your purpose in writing that, to share these ideas?
It is. You know, the book really has two parts. One is, why don't we laugh in the spiritual path? Because I think a lot of us tend to take humor out of that place. And then the flip side of that is, if we did bring it in, how would that make a difference? How would that impact our lives? You know, I entitled the book Laugh Your Way to Grace because to me it is grace. You know, if you can laugh at yourself, you can forgive yourself. And if you can forgive yourself, then you can forgive others. And isn't that what grace is all about? Kind of a sense of forgiveness and lightness. So I'm excited about this book. I really am.
And Jesus had a sense of humor, don't you think?
Yes, he did. He was probably one of the great comedians of all times. Absolutely.
People don't think that, though.
No, but you know, you look at, when you really look at his work, you know, it's everything from exaggeration and mm-hmm. satire. Mm-hmm. And you know, Jesus actually used humor like, say, Jon Stewart does these days to really kind of address the power structure, to give messages that are succinct and short with a bite that people remember. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think that's why some of those parables and stories are so remembered, because it was an oral society. It was the humor, it was the twist that made them sink in.
I still laugh about the log in somebody's eye.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Well, the central event the church celebrates today, the resurrection of Christ, is certainly one marked by a liberating joy. And your sermon is based on John's account. Would you read it for us?
Early on, the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Then Peter and the other disciple set out and went towards the tomb. The two were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent down and looked in and saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb. He saw the linen wrappings lying there, and the cloth that had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple who reached the tomb first also went in, and he saw and believed, for as yet they did not understand the scripture, that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples returned to their homes, but Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the feet. They said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "They have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." When she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not know it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you looking for?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Do not hold on to me, because I have not yet ascended to the Father. But go to my brothers and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went and announced to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord," and she told them that he had said these things to her.
Susan, how would you characterize the disciples' state of mind here at the beginning of this passage?
Panic, maybe? Mm-hmm. Confusion? You know, I can't imagine going through watching, you know, your Lord being crucified before your eyes, and then all of a sudden they hear news that the tomb is empty. What could that be? You know, who has stolen him? What does this mean?
But hadn't Jesus told them that he would rise from the dead, and didn't they see Lazarus come out of the grave?
They saw it, but they didn't believe it. Interesting, though, one of the disciples, the disciple whom Jesus loved, went into the tomb, and it said, and he believed.
Yes.
He didn't even have to go in the tomb. It was interesting earlier, it said he waits outside. And then when he does go in, he believes. So, you know, there was something in his heart that connected with Christ in spirit and knew that he lived. Interestingly, the other disciples seemed that they need something more tangible. They had, I think fear was driving their reaction mm-hmm. more than faith.
I wonder how we would have fared if we were there.
Yeah, I think I might still be locked up in the room. I don't know that I would have had the courage to come running out to see if the tomb was even open or empty.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of the fact that it's Mary Magdalene who's at the center of this? She gets to be the first to proclaim the resurrection, not the disciple.
Yeah, well, of course, I think of that in terms of Jesus' larger message of the banquet table where everyone is welcome. You know, Mary is not the power figure that you would expect, the one who should be given this great honor, yet here she is, the one that can proclaim the resurrection. And to me, that's just yet again another message of Jesus saying, everyone is equal, everyone is honored, everyone is loved at this table.
Well, Susan, your sermon is entitled Resurrection Biscuits, and I can't wait to find out why. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Peter. Happy Easter, everyone. I have to tell you, celebrating Easter always makes me think of my grandmother, Ganny, as we called her. Now, Ganny lived in a tiny little town in South Carolina. And when we'd go visit, the aroma of all kinds of good things cooking would float through her screen porch and out into the yard to greet us. Creamed corn, collard greens, and hopefully cornbread. Now, I say hopefully, because the one thing Ganny could not cook was biscuits. Lord, have mercy. She was just not a big believer in things like baking soda or baking powder. On those ominous days when she would decide to bake biscuits, she would open the door of her wood stove and pull out what looked like a tray of toasty hot shot puts. My uncle used to joke that if you dropped those biscuits on the floor, they would wake the dead. Thus their nickname, Resurrection Biscuits. Now, I know I shouldn't talk negatively about my grandmother's cooking, but we Southerners have a little trick. Down South, you can say anything you want about anybody you want as long as you end the phrase with bless their hearts. So, this being Easter Sunday, I think about Ganny, bless her heart, and those little sad resurrection biscuits. But you know, I think her biscuits offer us an important Easter message. Without baking powder, without that key ingredient, those biscuits became heavy and flat. And so too, life without the resurrection, life without Christ, can be heavy and flat. We tend to think of the Easter message as a message for the end of life. But frankly, I think we need the Easter message right now. Because as many of us know, death can come long before the end of life. How many people do we know who are walking this earth physically alive, but dead of spirit? Maybe you're one of them. How easily life can beat us down. It's like the story of the little boy with his head in his hands staring at his school book saying, I wish my arithmetic was done and that I was married and dead. It's easy to celebrate the resurrection of the body on this glorious Easter Sunday, but what about the resurrection of the spirit? What about tomorrow morning when the alarm clock goes off at 6 a.m. and our spirits sink? Where is the resurrection then? Where is the resurrection when we work night and day in a thankless job and yet find ourselves deeper in debt? Where is the resurrection when our child gets caught in an ugly cycle of drugs and alcohol and we watch them slip away? Where is the resurrection when after working 40 years, we realize we're about to lose our home? Where is the resurrection when we wake up one morning and realize nothing matters to us anymore? Where is the resurrection when at the end of life our family and friends are all gone and we're left alone to negotiate in a world that does not honor its old ones? Where is the resurrection then? It's not just resurrection after death we're talking about. It's resurrection during life. Like biscuits without baking powder, life without the resurrection can be heavy and flat. But today, I say we bring back that missing ingredient. Our Easter story from John is a familiar one. Mary goes to the tomb while it is still dark. She finds the stone rolled away and Jesus' body gone. Weeping, she looks inside the tomb and sees two angels,
"Woman, why are you weeping?" they ask. "They have taken away my Lord," Mary says, "and I do not know where they have laid him." Just then, she turned around and Jesus was standing there, but she didn't recognize him. "Woman, why are you crying?" "Sir," Mary says, "if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." "Mary," Jesus says. And the second he says her name, Mary realizes that the stranger standing before her was the risen Christ. "Rabboni," she says to Jesus. Mary recognized the living Christ. She recognized that life force in her midst, and it's exactly the same for us. We have the risen Christ right in front of us. We have a life force in our midst, and that's the missing ingredient we must reclaim. In February 2005, I took a vacation to Death Valley. Okay, I know, that's a really strange place to vacation. But something was happening in that desert during that time, something I felt I needed to see. Earlier that year, Death Valley had received a few more inches of rain than normal, and the otherwise bleak sand dunes and rocks of the desert were covered with tiny wildflowers. Desert gold, blazing star, poppies, verbenas, and evening primrose blanketed the desert landscape. For years, those little seeds had remained dormant, hidden under rocks and sand, in cracks and crevices, waiting, hoping for rain, that missing ingredient to bring them back to life. And the rain came, and flowers bloomed in the desert. It was such a brilliant symbol of renewal, of life from no life. I just needed to see it. Like those little dormant seeds, there is still life in us all. We just need to find that missing ingredient to bring it back. And that ingredient is Jesus. The Saturday before my very first Easter sermon, I was walking around my neighborhood trying to walk off some nerves. Towards the end of my walk, I stopped by the local deli to get some coffee. "Are you ready for the big service?" asked Hannah, who owns the place. I nodded tentatively and said, "I guess. I'm pretty nervous, though." She looked at me with a surprised expression and said, "Oh, you'll be fine. Just get out of the way and let Jesus do his work." I've never forgotten those words, for they're not only great advice for a sermon, they're great advice for life. The best thing we can do in life is to get out of the way and let Jesus do his work. Oh, we can put up a whole lot of blocks to the Spirit. Things like anger, negativity, fear, doubt, things that shut us down, weigh us down, things that keep that key ingredient of life and Spirit from working in our hearts. It's like the author Anne Lamott said, "God can't clean the house of you with you in it." You know, life has many great truths. Like, never slap a man chewing tobacco. Or, one appropriate for early April, when you put the word "the" and the word IRS together, you get "theirs." Another great truth in life is this. Deep down, the human spirit yearns for joy, yearns to soar. Kind of like my niece's favorite movie, Mary Poppins, a movie they made me watch over and over and over when they were little. Bless their hearts. Even after watching it 700 times, I still love the scene where Uncle Albert starts laughing in that lifeless, sterile bank vault. As he laughed with joy, he began to float up to the ceiling. The laughter and life and passion he felt brought him a lightness that made him float, and everyone around him began to laugh and float up as well. That scene taps a deep human truth that we all have a spirit that yearns for joy and lightness, a spirit that yearns to soar. And then life gets in the way. key ingredients go missing. And over time, our spirits sink and become flat and heavy and bleak. For everyone out there who feels that their dreams have been destroyed, their hopes dashed, their spirits crushed, here is the good news of Easter morning. The risen Christ can take our flat, heavy hearts and put back that key ingredient so that our spirits are not stuck on the ground, so that our spirits are not dictated by human pain or loss or disappointment, so that our spirits are not mired in a tomb. Easter brings each of us a second chance, a chance to see the life force in our midst, a chance to recognize the risen Christ right in front of us, a chance to start again. Please join me in prayer. Gracious and loving God, we thank you for bringing us to another glorious Easter morning. We arrive here from many varied places, some of us from a place of rejoicing, many of us from a place of hopelessness. Whatever our station this morning, Lord, give us the power to reclaim that missing ingredient in our lives, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Now, Susan Sparks offers some final thoughts on this week's sermon with our host, Peter Wallace.
Susan, you said we tend to think of the Easter message as a message for the end of life, but that frankly you think we need the Easter message now because death can come long before the end of life. I think you're right. Too many of us just go through the motions of life. We're flat and heavy like your grandma's biscuits. We're physically alive but dead of spirit. So can you suggest some ways we can wake our spirits up every day?
Yeah. Well, certainly we need it. I think just taking a moment at the beginning and end of each day to reflect on what it is that we've been given in this life, to reflect on the blessings that we have, and not only the blessings, but the work to be done, because every single one of us has a job on this earth. We were put here for a reason. And I think something that can spark a life into our spirits is recognizing that unique job that God has given us to do and reflect on it in the morning before we go out into the world and after we come home and have kind of recovered from our day.
Mm-hmm. You noted a number of situations that can really drag us down physically, emotionally, and spiritually, and I'm sure our listeners can identify with the financial struggles and the thankless jobs and the problems with our children. How does a resurrection attitude help us deal with those tough times in our lives?
Mm. Well, I think what it does is allows us to come at the great crises in life, whatever they may be, and realize that however big they are, even if they defeat us, they will never define us. Mm. And it leaves us in that place of protecting our spirits and our souls so that they can be intact even through the hardest things that life throws at us.
And like Mary did outside the tomb, we too have the risen Christ right in front of us, you said, but we don't recognize him. How can we be more aware of Christ in our midst?
I think something as simple as anytime you encounter a stranger, to say to yourself, this is Jesus, this is the risen Christ. And when you put that framework, that lens on encountering somebody that you don't know, or even somebody you don't like, or mm-hmm. somebody you're in a fight with, or somebody you disagree with, and all of a sudden realize you're speaking to the risen Christ, then I think that can really change the immediacy of the message.
And you said we put up so many blocks to the spirit, anger, negativity, fear, doubt. The advice that you are given to get out of the way and let Jesus do his work is key, I think. What are some ways that we can work on unblocking our spirit?
I think honest prayer is one of the best ways. Many times we're taught to engage God, to pray with God, like we do, say, a professor in school that has scared the daylights out mm-hmm. of us. But the dialogue that needs to be there is honest, open dialogue. And to get to the point where you can allow Jesus to do his work, you need to get rid of all of the issues, fear, anger, negativity, whatever. And to get rid of them, you have to offer them up.
Mm.
So I think just honest prayer where you know you can come to God with whatever's on your heart, lay it in front of God and say, take it from me so that I can do your work.
Susan Sparks, thank you for being with us. We look forward to having you back next week.
Thank you, Peter.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches, including the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, the Episcopal Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the Presbyterian Church USA, the United Church of Christ, and the United Methodist Church. We're online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller wishing you all God's blessings on day one and forever.
We at Day One are confident our programs offer what you would like to hear preached from pulpits across this nation and to millions through our radio and internet network. We take intelligent biblical study seriously. We believe in an all-loving and compassionate God, and we've made sure we are never driven by personality or politics. We stand with you in the greatest tradition of American Christianity, and for 65 years have not missed one weekly broadcast. As we celebrate our 65th anniversary, I would like to ask each of you to help celebrate and support Day One by offering $1 for each of these 65 years. $65 for 65 years. Join this unique opportunity to say yes to Day One and its continued success by sending your gift to Day One, 644 West Peachtree Street, Suite 300, Atlanta, Georgia, 30308. Again, that's 644 West Peachtree Street, Suite 300, Atlanta, Georgia, 30308. Or give online at dayone.org. Thank you for helping us celebrate this great milestone.